So if I need to summarize the previous presentations in just one slide, the climate is changing. Okay, so no news over there. And let's start moving forward. So I'm a scientist, and we scientists like to do predictions. So this is me doing a prediction of what's going to happen. Okay. So and my prediction is that the climate will continue to change. So with that, the question is, how much is going to change? And you probably, I think you already seen this slide, which is the changes in temperatures for the last 110 years or so, and they're projected depending on the different scenarios. The red scenario will be the business as usual. We keep pumping greenhouse gases into the atmosphere, and that will be the raise on temperature. And the blue line will be the best case scenario if the Paris Accords would have taken place and will follow those policies, and then there will be some stabilization. Now, I think what we need to do is put this into a perspective of what it means for us. And a few of these, of you probably have seen this sort of analogy. So this is my dad, okay? He was born in 1920-something, and he lived 85 years. So during his lifetime, you see, he didn't really experience climate change. Okay, so that was pretty stable. The environment for him. Now, this is me. I was born in 1960, and I hope to live 85 years. So I will be lucky by the time I die. It will be before that turning point where we as humans, as a society, will start to learn if we decided to keep going into this red line where we are currently now, or we took drastic actions and things start to stabilize. Okay? Now, this is my son. He was born 1996, and if he gets to live 85 years old, he will be experiencing the really dramatic environment, okay? So for the generation of people who organized this conference here, for those students, this is a major issue. And what will happen for those which are being born right now, or maybe in a few years from now? The scenarios could be even worse. So I think this is a, you know, we really need to take this into what it means for us as a society, for those who are currently living here, and just one generation. We don't need to look forward too much. Now, a few years ago, I had sort of this discussion with a colleague, where this person was telling me, well, Montana is not really the poster child for climate change. I was kind of that stick in my mind. I was like, is Montana a poster child for climate change or not? Because I actually yesterday, no, this was done 2 or 3 days ago, I Googled Montana and went the images, and these are the first three images that I found in Google. So MSU, a beautiful prairie, and Glacier National Park. So we will be tempted to say, like, no, we are not really the poster child for climate change. Maybe. Maybe not if we just go back a little bit in time and go to Glacier National Park, and that will be a photo taken in 1887 of one of the glaciers, and you know where we are, I'm going. Basically, this is the same spot, 2013, and the glaciers are disappearing. And if you go back to the same place just a few years ago, 2017, people were actually paddleboarding on a former glacier, which I think is, at least for me, dramatic. So, yeah, I think Montana is one of the poster child for climate change, not only for what is occurring within our state, but also for what we produce. We are the seventh state in the nation in terms of production of coal. So we may not be producing too many greenhouse gases here. We are only a little bit over 1 million people, but we export coal across the nation. And you've already seen this photo of the prediction of climate change and the different scenarios. This will be the red scenario. And what we'll be expecting is that there will be an increase in temperature across the whole state of Montana, across every single month of the year. That's where we are heading. So My talk will be, what are the implications in terms of our agricultural systems, which is the number one economy here. So one positive aspect could be that if it becomes a bit warmer, we will have more opportunities for winter calving and lambing. So there could be an expanse in that industry. And indeed, what we are seeing here is the number of heads. Each stud represents 1,000 heads of cattle that are no longer in the southern part of the United States and are moving north because it's getting too warm over there. So you see that, yeah, there is an increase in one industry, in particular ranching here across Montana. Also, you can say that, well, there's an opportunity for crop diversification. If there's warmer temperatures, and by the way, we have a little bit more CO2 in the environment, plants love that environment, we can grow more crops. True, if we have the moisture. And that's a key factor here. So this is the trends, the relative humidity that we have experienced since 1981 till present, in comparison with what happened in the first 60 years of the 20th century. And the blue areas means they got more moisture. Brown means less moisture. So what you see here is that in the eastern part of Montana, and also North Dakota and South Dakota, they are getting more moisture. And associated with that, you can see that, for example, in Kansas and North Dakota, the percentage of acres that were planted into wheat has decreased simply because it has been replaced by other crops such as corn and soybean. And also in the northeast part of Montana, now moving into the central part of Montana, there is a growing industry of pulse crops, which is great. But in other parts of the state, it's actually getting drier. And what would happen there, it's a key issue. So the prediction is that we are going to be getting more moisture in the form of rainfall in, you know, the months of January to May and from October to December. But during the summer, we're going to get warmer and drier summers. Okay? And that's a major problem for agriculture because that's basically when the grains are failing. So higher temperature and less moisture means more stress for plants. So we decided to start testing these ideas, and we decided to do it across different cropping systems and see how do cropping systems respond to this new predicted environment. So this study is located a few miles from here in Fort Ellis. You can see MSU in the back of the photo. That's Bozeman. So the highway, if you take the highway, go towards Livingston, it will be on your left, okay, these plots. And basically we have there is a five-year rotation, safflower, underseeded with sweet clover stays a year as a cover crop, winter wheat, lentils, and again winter wheat. And then we have a set of plots that we manage conventionally. This is a non-till with the use of synthetic nitrogen, and pesticides, particularly herbicides, so it's conventional cropping systems. Then we have an organic system that is managed with tillage, and the problem there is that we said, well, if you put too much tillage and it gets drier, there could be problems of soil erosion. So we said, how can we manage that? And we said, well, we perhaps can integrate sheep into the organic systems so that we can terminate the cover crops and manage weeds through sheeps. And we were able to do it relatively successfully. We managed an organic system non-till for 3 years over the 5 years of the rotation, so we reduced tillage by 60%. It's an experimental system. we have a big problem with weeds. We are learning a lot there, so every time I show results from there, take it with a grain of salt, because we are learning from that system. But the conventional and the organic till systems are systems that farmers use every day here in Montana. So when we tested for increased temperatures, we have these what we call open top chambers, kind of greenhouses, and basically retain heat, and it allows plants to grow inside, and we have an increase of temperature in around, on average, 2 to 3 Celsius. And then we decided to, and you can see here the effect. You see how the snow is melting already inside those areas of those little greenhouses. And then we decided to further put more stress in terms of increased temperature and reduced moisture by putting these rainout shelters, and it intercepts around 40% of the moisture. So with that system, we are sort of mimicking what we expect in higher temperature, 2 to 3 Celsius, and reduced moisture. And you can see a little bit of a results over there. Those are weeds that are just loving that particular environment, okay? So I'm going to show you a few graphs here with results. This is the biomass of weeds that we obtained in the three systems. I'm going to show 2 years. The non-till system, we spray, no weeds. So that was pretty stable. In the organic system, as we increase the temperature and reduce the moisture, we have more weed biomass. And the same thing happened in the organic graze. Again, take it with a grain of salt. We are not, you know, we don't really know how to manage that system yet. Now, the problem was in the second year, when it was even hotter and drier, things went to hell. We just love that environment over there. The other question was what happened with yields. And you can see here, early in the summer, you see the current climate, you have the seedling of winter wheat. Now, when you get warmer and they have moisture because it's spring, you can see it was doing really good. And the hot and dry was already being hit and getting nailed. Okay? So when we look at the yields, you see that in the current climate, the at the end of the summer, we have a good harvest. But even the places where they just were getting warmer looked great at the beginning of the season. By the time they got the summer heat, they got nailed. And the warmer and drier basically was a disaster. We have almost no yield. And here are the results. You can see that, interestingly, I showed that there were no weeds in the conventional system. But you can see that the yields, even in the absence of weeds, were decreasing as we get higher temperature and warmer environment. However, the first year, the two organic systems were really stable. So we're kind of excited. We said, well, perhaps there are more resilience to climate change. The second year, 2017, was drier, and things went really bad for three systems. So we get a decrease in yields as we get warmer, and the prediction is going to be even worse when it gets warmer and drier. We're looking at other things. One of the things we're currently working right now is what happened with the soil microbial communities when you get these different environments. So we collected samples of the soils, and we did some analysis. Doesn't really matter that graph over there, but it's kind of the abundance of the different microbe species that we found. the relative abundance is color-coded and goes from low to high temperatures. And basically, you can see as it gets really warm, there's a shift in species. That's basically what I want to show you. As we change the environment, we're changing the soil microbial communities. Question is, what happened with the system? One question we ask in terms of the resilience of the system. And so we did a greenhouse study. I'm going to just fly over the study in a second. But basically, I know this is the type of figures that you should not show in a classroom, but we are not in a class, so I think it's okay to show this. A lot of text here and there. But basically, what you see there is the different system we have, the conventional, the organic till, and organic graze, with the three different climate conditions, and we have wheat. And then we grew wheat in the greenhouse for 2 generations. And theory says, in practice, we know that we'll be accumulating pathogenic organisms there because you keep growing the same crop. So when we grew for the fourth time wheat, we thought it was going to be really bad and we're going to have a lot of pathogens. However, we thought if you grow, say, peas, which is totally different, we may allow the system to recover. And if the system recovers faster, it will be more resilient. and we're checking how climate changes and those three management systems conditions the ability of the system to recover from that disturbance of having so many pathogens. Okay? And again, an ugly graph that I just put yesterday or 2 days ago, but what I want to show is that in the current climate and the warmer environment, both the non-till conventional, the organic grades, the non-till systems were doing good. They were having positive values. The till organic was not doing that good. That's the third line. However, that resilience of the system totally disappeared when we have warmer and drier environments. So basically, what this is telling us is that when we have these new environments, we won't be able to withstand the increase of pathogenic organisms. So it's just a new dimension that we are currently just exploring. Other things we are working right now is how does those microorganisms modify, for example, crop weed competition, insect behavior. We know that microbes modify the volatiles that plants produce. So if you change the microbial communities, are you changing the way by which plants communicate with insects? We are working on those right now. So basically, I think these new environments, the results are showing that are going to be very dramatic. The impact is going to be very dramatic in terms of our yields. And we're also opening a Pandora box that we don't really know what's going to happen with other ecological interactions. Now, this is what I do as a kind of a plant ecologist, applied pest ecologist. But at one point, we needed to go and see how people within Montana perceive the issue of climate change. And definitely, I'm not a social scientist. Okay, I'm an ecologist. I feel more comfortable talking to a plant than a human. But I kind of been able to meet a great group of colleagues. And together, what we decided to do is go around Montana and ask a series of questions regarding of how concerned are you in terms of climate change. And that was done in rural communities within Montana. Do you acknowledge that the climate is changing or not? Do you think it's an imminent problem or not? Can we mitigate the impact of climate change? And finally, we ask why we have problems with climate change. What are the causes of climate change? And we also ask a series of demographic questions, such as the location, your affiliation, your age, income. I thought, the sociologist that was working with us said, like, you need to ask political view. I was like, I don't want to ask that. But we asked that. It was great. And I will show you the results in a minute, and the gender and ethnicity. So these are basically the different number of responses we got across the state of Montana. And the way I'm going to be presenting the results here is just for a few set of results. This is political views and perception of climate change. Okay? So one means you consider yourself liberal. And seven, you consider yourself conservative. So if we go clockwise, it goes from liberal to conservative. And from zero means I don't think this is an issue. Four, I'm really, really concerned about this particular issue. Okay? So when we ask the question of concern, how concerned are you about the impact of climate change for Montana agricultural production, what you can see here is that we are all really concerned, regardless of our political affiliation. We all agree. How serious do you think climate change will become in the future? And there was a little of a discrepancy. Those which are more liberal think it's going to be really bad. Those which are extremely conservative, like seven, think it's not going to be that bad. But we didn't get any zeros. And also, it was, there was quite of an harmony there. I was personally surprised. And when we look at how capable are we as a society to mitigate the issue of climate change, exactly the same pattern. You know, more liberal, more capable, more conservative, less capable. But still, we didn't find any zeros. People, I would say that we within Montana are all concerned more or less equally and perceive climate change more or less the same way, except when we ask, for example, what is the major cause of climate change? And we ask, it is a man-made issue. Other causes, and we say, for example, other causes, the, you know, the Earth is tilting, or whatever, volcanic actions, or the climate is not changing, or God is influencing the environment. We gave all those options. And you can see that 90% of the liberal, from 1 to 3 liberal levels, thought it was a man-made issue. And as soon as you start to be more conservative, you don't really believe it's a man-made issue. And exactly the opposite trend, you know, the climate is not changing, or it's other causes as you become more and more conservative. And I think that was the major difference that we found within our citizens here in Montana. So I gave this presentation series of time around Montana, and I said, like, well, I think we can start a dialogue because we have a lot of things in common in terms of the mitigations, in terms of our concerns, prevention, benefit, cost, adaptations. But the most important thing, in my opinion, the most important thing is that we need to base our discussions on facts. And I have to stop here, and I have to say that because I'm giving this presentation in the Gen 40 auditorium, I feel myself in a contradiction here. Because Gen 40 is our state representative, and these are some of the things that he said related to just climate change. The climate is always changing. You know, a few years ago, the climate was not changing. Now the climate is always changing. Yeah, the climate is always changing, but we haven't seen this unprecedented change in climate. This is something we need to acknowledge. He said that shutting down a coal-fired power will have negligible effects on climate change. He cited in the Billing Gazette for not having any specific policy regarding to climate change. And these are his voting history in 2018. In just 3 votes related to climate change. So this is not environmental issues, this is just in climate change. And in those 3 votes, he basically opposed for any resolution that will help mitigate the problem of climate change. So as a Montana citizen, I'm concerned. Now, like it was referred in the previous presentation, I think that concern goes more just for Montana citizens. And you already heard in the previous presentation about Greta Thunder, a high school student, 16-year-old in Swedish, that decided not to go to school and put a sign in the parliament saying school strike for climate, and decided not to go to school and start this movement. But at the beginning, politicians were not listening to her, except her peers. And started a movement, and a few weeks ago, there were 1.4 million young students who walked out of school in 121 countries around the world to demand actions to politicians on climate change. Now, guess what happened? When you have 1.4 million people, and I think I understand there's going to be a new march in May 24th, when you have all those people marching, he started to be heard. And last week, he received an incredible welcome in the British Parliament. He talked in the European Union. He met the Pope. So, you know, we can say that in some aspect of our society, there is some change. And I started this presentation on purpose with this slide because somehow, you know, it reflects my feelings of, you know, my concerns about climate change. You can see a landscape that is invaded by clouds and winds going on around, and the future doesn't look very good there. But when I started listening about these new generation, the young kids who are walking out of school, I have to say thank you.